Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikaitis.
Hello and welcome to episode 870 with Diana Kander. We brought Diana back because she has more fantastic insights to share about being memorable. And in fact, this was truly one of my most memorable interviews. So she walks the talk quite effectively, and she's just a delight to hear. So you'll learn, one, precisely how forgettable you really are, two, the simple secret to becoming more memorable, and three, why you don't want to start with a self-introduction. So if you want to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to items that we've referenced, please visit us over at awesomeatyourjob.com/EP870. While you're there, take a look around. Some of the goodies at awesomeatyourjob.com. Full-text searchable transcripts of all 870 episodes, summary write-ups of the actionable wisdom to your email, and more at awesomeatyourjob.com. Now here's a bit about Diana. Diana is a serial entrepreneur who entered the United States as a refugee from Ukraine at the age of 8. By her early 30s, she'd launched and sold millions of dollars worth of products and services. Today, she's an innovation consultant, keynote speaker, and New York Times bestselling author whose books have been taught in over 100 universities. She can juggle, do a handstand, though not quite at the same time yet. Big thanks to Diana for sharing her wisdom with us. And big thanks to our sponsors. Check them out. One sponsor to check out is Storyworth, who's offering $10 off your first purchase at storyworth.com/awesome. Whenever I'm thinking about meaningful Mother's Day gifts, Storyworth leaps to mind. Storyworth is an online service that makes it fun and easy to write an entire book of life memories and preserve them for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved ones a single life-related question that you pick from their collection, like, what's the bravest thing you've ever done? I have personally loved the prompt so much that I have refreshed their questions page many times. All they have to do is reply with their story. After a year, Storyworth compiles those stories, memories, and even photos into a beautiful hardcover book to provide a valued keepsake. Families love Storyworth so much, they've got 25,000 five-star reviews on Trustpilot with millions of stories preserved. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. And right now, you can save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/awesome. That's storyworth.com/awesome for $10 off your first purchase. Now, here's Diana. Diana, welcome back to How to Be Awesome at Your Job.
Pete, I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, I am excited to be chatting again. I remember, it's funny, we're talking about being memorable. You're just chatting about how I remember a lot of the things you said last time, even more than the average guest, even though they're all swell and awesome. So yeah, you're walking the talk here. So I'm excited to get into some of your insights.
Pete, I came here with a present for you.
Ooh.
I had hoped it would be here in person, but the mail service is not my friend this week. But you have done such an incredible job with this podcast. And when you're on YouTube, you get those YouTube awards. And in podcasting, there's no awards. Like, nobody sends you anything in the mail. And so maybe it's presumptuous of me, Pete, but I made you this.
Oh, wow.
20 million downloads, acrylic plaque. Imagine me holding it.
Oh, cool.
Here we are.
No, thank you.
And so I'll send it to you after the show for you to put on your desk. But what an incredible feat for you to accomplish.
Oh, thank you. Well, that is so thoughtful. Well, I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to placing that prominently. And I wonder, because we've had other episodes about like how to, I don't know, get people's attention or, you know, be persuasive or cold email or break into warm enough relationship or whatever. And I don't get very many cool gifts. It's like, I get a lot of pitches, but it's pretty rare gift. And I didn't even know this was coming. We said yes to you just because you're fantastic and we want to hear what you have to say. So this is just pure gravy. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Bonus.
Yeah.
Gravy is where relationships are made, Pete.
Quoted already. There you go. Well, it's fun. We're already warmed up, but I had to know about your 2023 goal of doing the splits.
Yes.
Because we talked about your plank insights last time, which was fun. And
yes.
So I want to hear about you and the splits. How's that going?
Every year I pick an impossible physical feat. So I teach people how to be more curious and innovative in their lives. And the way I push myself out of my comfort zone is I pick something that feels impossible for me to apply those skills to. So between the plank, I did a handstand, I did pull-ups, and then this year is the splits. And it's going pretty good.
Fascinating.
not even out of my comfort zone. It just takes a little bit of practice and the right tutorials and commitment.
So now when it comes to the splits, what are the primary muscles that got to get real flexible? Is it about hamstrings? Is it all of them?
Oh boy. Yeah. It's quads and hamstrings.
Okay.
And your goal is to not tear anything while you're trying to get to it. But for me, the splits felt like an impossible goal. I'm over 40. I can't even sit in a straddle. Some people might know that, you know, like with your legs, even a little apart, like at gymnastics for my kids, it's like, I can't do it.
Okay.
And so it felt like literally like, is this even possible for an older person like me? And in fact, it is.
Oh, so you've done it.
I'm getting close. Okay. You know, I have till the end of the year.
So you're like way ahead of schedules.
Feeling pretty confident.
So you feel like it's just a matter of time.
That's it.
Well, now I want to know, as these muscles loosen and your range of motion improves, do you experience less pain or better posture or other benefits? What I'm getting at, Diana, is do we need to have a stretching episode for How to Be Awesome at Your Job, or is that not relevant?
I know that you're a big fan of the one thing, Pete.
All right.
And I thought this was going to be my one thing, that if I learn how to do the splits, I just imagined like a world of just general flexibility and posture. And I will tell you that that is 100% not the case.
All right.
I have no additional skills. Like nothing else is stretchier. It's just this one teeny tiny thing that I can do.
Okay. Now we know. Yeah. So, but it'll still be cool. So
still very impressive. And I can do it anywhere. Unlike pull-ups, you know, I need a lot of things to be right.
Well, when you say it like that, I'm imagining you're just chatting with someone you just met. Like, hey, check it out. I can almost do the splits. Watch this.
I can do it at the airport. Yeah. People ask me because people know I'm working on it. They're like, can you do it? I'm like, let me do it right here for you.
That's lovely. That's lovely. Okay. All right. Well, we are talking about, you've got a book here, a fresh one, Go Big or Go Home, 5 Ways to Create a Customer Experience That Will Close the Deal. And I loved it when you were sharing with us, hey, I got this book. You did part of our work for us in terms of like, well, you know what? Not all of our listeners are really in the world of sales or customer relations or customer experiences, but you're like, hey, how to make your presentations memorable or how to double your closing rate for pitches. Like, oh, well, that sounds great. So lay it on us. Any fascinating discoveries you've made while putting this together?
Yeah. If we want to talk about being memorable, Pete, I think it's important to understand how forgetting works first. So let me tell you the research. An hour after you do your pitch, your presentation, you're like trying to get a new job, you're presenting something and you're trying to get a big decision. An hour afterwards, they will forget 50% of what you said.
All right.
And a week afterwards, they will forget 90%. And unfortunately, you don't choose the 10% that's left. It'll be like what shirt you wore or how many times you said, like it's a random 10% of the presentation.
All right.
So the only way to mess with those statistics, to have them remember more of it, is to have them have emotional peaks during the presentation.
Okay.
So emotion is directly tied to our memory. That's why you can remember almost everything about 9/11 or a happier note, your wedding day. You can remember the weather, you know, like every special part of that day, but you can't remember a month before that what happened. Anything, what happened that day. So if we can tie our presentation to some kind of peaks in their emotion, then we'll have a lot more luck having them remember it and pick us. Then we're talking to them on a subconscious level and we're saying, hey, this just feels right.
Okay. Emotional peaks. That sounds great.
Yes.
But I mean, fundamentally, how can I get someone else to have an emotional peak?
Yes. How do you do it?
I'm thinking that Hollywood's awesome at this. We got the musical scores and the shots and the lighting and the multi-million dollar budgets and the most talented actors in the world. And the directors say, no, that's not good enough. There's one again. And they have accents, I guess, in my mind's eye. So how do we do that when we're just humans talking to each other?
That's exactly it. And like, think about how you can remember lines from movies. Like, can you remember a line from a presentation? No.
Only a few.
So how do you get it in there and get it sticky? And so in the book, we outlined a framework that spells out the word magic. So five different things that you can do to create that emotional connection. And I'm happy to go through some of them or all of them with you today.
Well, yeah. So I think that I'm in. in terms of let's hear those five things. But I'm thinking, have we established a sufficient why? That's one of my little internal guidelines I'm thinking about. Being memorable sounds great. Being persuasive sounds great. Any other compelling reasons why being memorable and having emotion transmitted will be fantastic for folks looking to be awesome at their jobs?
Let me tell you how this book came together. So I got a call from the CEO. His company creates experiences for like stadiums, universities. And he said, I want to write a book about our company and what we do. And I said, good luck, buddy. I do not want to be a part of this effort.
Oh, did you want me to write that for you? Okay.
And he said, okay, I get it. Will you at least come take a tour? And I said, yeah, I'll come take a tour. And I show up and he's walking me through this really impressive facility. And then he says, that's the world's biggest 3D printer. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And he said, we used it to build the world's biggest 3D printed thing for the Raiders' new torch. You know, they have a torch in their stadium.
Okay.
And I was like, how did a company out of Kansas City win this huge deal? And he said, oh, we have a move. Like our typical close rate is 45%, but when we do this move, we'll close 90% of deals.
Oh, this is what I live for, Diana. Lay it on me.
And I was like, okay. And so he explains what they do. And I was like, this sounds amazing. And I start interviewing employees at the firm, customers of theirs, other people who do move-like things. And I become obsessed with this idea. And by the end of it, I'm begging him to let me co-author this book about this method that they do so that I can share it with as many people as I can. And so—
What's the move?
He did it to me. It's about connecting with the person that you're talking to on an emotional level. And you can do it even if you never even meet the person. And it's about using these tools that are at your disposal that most people neglect. And because they're not memorable, they are just mediocre. They blend in with everybody else who's pitching or trying to get the attention of the people that they're pitching.
Well, this sounds good. Now, Diana, before we get too excited, I'm wondering if there is any nervous folk in the audience say, wait a minute, Diana, is this manipulative? If I'm stirring up emotions in another person deliberately?
Yes. I don't think it's about being manipulative. I think it's about showing exactly who you are. I think that a lot of times we want to connect with other people. We're excited about the thing that we're trying to sell, but we don't know how to communicate that. We can't be like, Pete, this is an exceptional book and you have to know about it. That's just mediocre. So how do we connect soul to soul, Pete? Like establish deeper trust and connection with people in a way that just our words alone can't do.
Okay, gotcha. So I think maybe some fundamental principles associated with, hey, it's something you really believe in. It's going to be for their best interest and for their benefit. You're not a flim-flammer or a con artist. Okay, so assuming that's true, let's proceed.
Okay, let's assume that's true. So the framework spells out the word magic. Do you want me to give you all of them? Let me open up the book. M, you make something surprising. A, you analyze them on a deeper level. G, you give the pitch in the right order. I, you include a 3D object. And C, you co-create together.
Okay.
Is it embarrassing that I had to open up my own book to read those five short statements to you? I just wanted to get them right.
Oh, no, no. I dig it. I think that will facilitate Googlers everywhere. who is that guest that Pete had who was so amazing and
magic.
It was a magic and it was, so that'll be useful. It'll trigger the keywords just right. So yeah, let's go through it. How do we make it surprising?
All right, Pete. Making surprising is doing ordinary things in unordinary ways. It is finding little ways. No.
For listeners, she is sipping from a How to Be Awesome at Your Job mug, which you have had printed because they don't exist in my world.
Yes. I made my own mugs. I love swag so much, Pete. I love swag. I have an account at the place where I made your award. I love swag so much. I made my own How to Be Awesome at Your Job swag.
That is fantastic. Thank you. And now I want one. And I'm wondering, when it comes to swag, you didn't print 300 of these.
I didn't.
You did one.
Yes.
So who, first of all, very practical. Who lets you do just one?
You got to find ways to do ordinary things in unordinary ways. So for instance, people who are applying for jobs can find creative ways to convey their information. I've heard of people who put their resumes on a cake or in a box of donuts or in a chocolate wrapper, or, you know, lots of food items. But you basically communicate the same thing you would communicate other ways, but in new and unique ways. And that could include having some kind of sight or sound or color. Does that make sense?
That is so good. You know, back in the day when I was doing tons of case interview coaching for aspiring consultants.
Yes.
There was a guy. He was awesome. He was having trouble getting attention from, I believe it was McKinsey and Company. And, you know, it's one of these selective consulting firms. And it, for his birthday, he sent a cake to the office that had some of his contact information. And it said, all I want for my birthday is an interview with McKinsey. And they didn't respond right away, but they got around to it and he got the job. So
that's amazing.
That was cool.
Because it was memorable.
Yeah.
And this could be as simple as when you send an email to somebody to send a video instead.
Yeah.
Or maybe to use some kind of music. I mean, it's just changing what people are expecting. It could be as simple as changing your signature line in your emails to be something that is surprising, unexpected for them.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. And very practical little piece here. Where can I get swag printed on a onesie twosie basis instead of, oh, buy 500 mugs?
Zazzle.
All right.
Do you know that website?
There we go. I do now. Thank you. Zazzle.
Oh, yeah. I have a Black membership.
Oh.
it's official.
Okay. So we're surprising. We are doing something that is unexpected and it's maybe physical. Just for funsies, can you give us a couple more examples?
Yeah. I think it's all about researching the person. So for instance, we started this interview and I had that award, but in order to come up with a thing that I wanted to surprise you with, Pete, I had to listen to a bunch of your old podcasts and I had to think about what would Pete care about? What would be valuable to him? And so it's about really just being thoughtful and starting the conversation off by saying, this interview is going to be different than your other interviews and just making them feel that teeny tiny tweak.
Yes, indeed. I dig it. I love it. And that takes some hustle, some effort, some time and energy. And I guess you could have helpers assist you with some of that in terms of background legwork research. But a part of it, I guess, really does need to be from you.
You have to care. So you can't do the move on every project. I mean, you can think about if you have a sales process, how to add pieces of magic that are consistent, but it still requires this move, this special kind of connection with others. Requires you caring and doing a little bit of extra in order to make them feel special.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. And it was funny. And I think I get a lot of the opposite. Well, I get a lot of pitches and it's a blessed place to be.
Sure.
I mean, better than the first few where we were pounding the pavement, asking lots of people and only a fraction said yes. Now just say, oh, so many incoming pitches, but they say, oh, I love your show. It's like, I don't know if you've listened to my show at all, like particularly because this is so not relevant. So that's a real bummer when it's just straight up, I don't know, lying or inauthentic, you know? And so you do that and it's surprising. That's very cool. Could you give some more examples? We got a cake. We got the 20 million downloads. We got the mug.
It depends on what you're doing. So if you're trying to get a job, again, it's about getting somebody's attention in a meaningful way. If you're trying to create a memorable presentation, surprise could be something funny that happens that's just different than how most speeches start. We believe in this idea of the golden window, which is you have 30 seconds that they're paying attention and their brain is asking themselves, do I know what this is like? Like, have I seen something like this before? And if the answer is yes, they'll pull out their phone. So if in that first 30 seconds, you can do something that says, this is different. You need to pay attention. Because if you think about it, Pete, like what your body does when you're surprised, you kind of make this like face.
Mm-hmm.
You're open. Your hands are open. Your eyes are open. Your mouth is, you're just like taking in as much content as possible. And that's what we're doing to them. We're making them surprised and then they will pay attention to the next part.
Mm-hmm. And so for the start of a speech, I mean, you might give a counterintuitive fact.
Absolutely. Or I start my speeches on curiosity with a picture of Snoop Dogg. And I say, how many people in the audience know who this is? And what's he up to these days? What jobs is he doing? And now I have all eyes, all attention on me because they're like, what's happening? I thought I was learning about strategy in business. And they are, but we're going to get there in a very fun way.
Mm-hmm. I like it. Snoop Dogg. I'm gonna press you even more, Diana. Here's some more examples in the context specifically of a speech or presentation. Snoop Dogg, they didn't think that was coming up. What else?
adding elements of music, like nobody's expecting like a soundtrack behind you. Some people include funny videos or memes, just anything that disrupts, like this is going to be educational, this is going to be boring, I have education for you. Anything that you can make surprising.
Now I'm thinking about another speaker. This was hilarious. He was all mic'd up and they were reading his bio. It was like, so-and-so has presented in so many countries or done whatever. And and he just said, oh my, that's impressive. Just like, we know you wrote the bio that they're reading right now. That just tickled me. I guess I'm in the speaking, you know, world.
Yeah.
But that just tickled me because it was surprising. Like, nobody does that. And sure enough, it got me in a receptive mode.
Yeah. And, you know, let's talk about some of the other elements of magic, because these can be stacked. So the more of them you can do at once. So, for instance, I got your mug on how to be awesome at your job. And that is a 3D object, which we'll talk about in a second, plus the element of surprise. So how do we combine some of these together?
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's hear about the A.
Okay. So A is analyze them on a deeper level. Most people, when they're pitching somebody, are doing demographic research, which is how long have they been at their company? How big is their company? Just like, imagine creating a human-shaped wallet. That's what you're doing. You're just figuring out what the wallet looks like, but you're not getting to know them as a person. And what you really want to do is psychographic research, which is understanding their values and what they really care about and things that are tangential, like on the surrounding edges of what they actually do for a living, because that will help you connect with them much more than anything that you talk about in the presentation.
Well, now, Diana, now I want to know what are my values that the public doesn't know so much.
Well, you heard earlier when I was like, well, Pete, you love the one thing.
I do.
You do. And now I can talk about my content in terms that resonate with you, if that makes sense.
You know, it's so funny. That didn't actually resonate with me as much. Not that you were wrong. I really do love the one thing. But I guess I love the one thing so much. It's like, yes, of course, every human being should. And it's just
everybody loves it.
That's just as it should be for all of humanity. Shout out to Jay Papasan. Listen to that episode where we talked about the one thing. So yeah, it's funny. I didn't even recognize that as distinctly me, because it's like the water that the fish swims in.
I will tell you, Pete, a lot of people still don't know what the one thing is.
It's true.
They don't know about it. So it's about understanding this person and what they care about. Like, I know you care a lot about systems and productivity, and you're exceptional at creating systems around this show on how to make sure that you have a really good show that doesn't take up a lot of your time away from three kids. And these are all points for me to communicate, like, how we value the same things.
That's good. It's true. Well, yeah, it's funny. It might not have surprised me in terms of like, yes, like, wow, you figured that out about me. But I was sort of dialed into it like a yes. Clearly, we are on the same page here. Proceed. So it was a positive impact, if not a surprising one.
Do you know how jury consultants work, Pete? Have you ever heard of this job?
Ooh, just a little. Only from the movies.
Okay, so you go into a trial, and at a trial, they'll start with like 48 people sometimes that they have to narrow down to 12.
That's right. Voir dire.
Yes. And as soon as they come up with this list of 48 names that they hand to the lawyer scans it and sends it to, I'm not going to say guy in a van, but today, guy in an office that's now starts doing what is called psychographic research on each one of these people by looking at their social media profiles, like everything about their lives, their criminal records. I'm not saying you need to do that about your business contacts, but you would understand them at a deeper level. But you would be surprised at how much information is available, articles that they write, things that they care about, that could just be little hooks for you to bring up as conversation points during your interaction.
Well, that's really good. And I suppose I did not know that, although it makes total sense now that you say it, because I just sort of assumed they were looking at the broad strokes in terms of, oh, this is a woman, that's going to be good for us. Oh, this is an elderly person, that's bad for us, you know?
Yes.
But you're saying, oh, no, we go deeper than surface level.
Uh-huh. No, there's a person in their ear.
Whoa.
And it usually takes, like, a lot of people think that takes a lot of work. No, it takes like 15 minutes if you're looking in the right places to find, and we're looking for moments of connection. We're looking for a good reason, you know, not to get them off the jury. But it's pretty much the same thing that you would do in a conversation with somebody, Pete, where you're like, oh, where did you grow up? But you're doing it ahead of time before you're actually in the meeting.
Yeah, that's cool. And in your experience, folks generally like this as opposed to, whoa, that's creepy, Diana. How do you know all this about me?
Yeah, well, you don't show up and you're like, Pete, I see here that you live at this address. Your house is worth this much and your children's names are so-and-so. Like, you don't want to try to freak them out. You got to be cool, you know, but you find ways to, in a cool way, make it a part of the presentation, whatever you're pitching.
Okay. So we've got that. How about the G?
The G is you give the pitch in the right order. So Pete, most people, they mean well, but this is how most presentations start. They say, hey, let me tell you a little bit about myself. Then I'll tell you about my company. And then I'll tell you why you should choose the thing that I'm recommending. Mm-hmm. And that is the opposite order in which you're supposed to pitch. We do it because we think that we need to establish credibility, but they don't really care about us or anything we have to sell until they believe that we understand them and how they see the world.
Yeah.
So every presentation has to start with them and communicating to them that you see the world in the same way that they do.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And now I'm thinking about webinars because the formula...
That's exactly it.
It's always the same thing. It's like, let me tell you about my story. And it's so funny. It's like, I don't care about their story.
That's right.
But what they're trying to do is see how I'm relatable and like you. Like, I too had dry eyes or this pain or a business that was floundering. I was overwhelmed by looking at different marketing approaches. So I get that that's what they're trying to do. I don't find it as grand, but I think what you're trying to reconcile this, I think what you're saying is the point is less like I went to Harvard and that's an impressive school and I got really good grades and I've been in this industry for 20 years. It's like, that's not so interesting. But like, if you also love the one thing or whatever, that is conveying that you're telling me about yourself, but you're more so conveying we see the world similarly.
Yeah. And I think that we do that by starting with them and not us. So your listeners know very little about me right now, actually. They do not know that I am a refugee from the Soviet Union. I was born in the Ukraine. These are all interesting things, but they have nothing to do with them and what they're trying to do in their lives. I want to come in just bringing a lot of value. And at the end, if I've done my job of showing them why this can really help them at work and in their business, then I'll tell them some stuff about me. Then they'll want to know, like, well, who's this person that I now care about? Well, what are some interesting things about them? That is the place to bring in stuff about yourself and your origin story and why you're passionate about this. But at the beginning, it's just like it's glazing over. Nobody's listening.
And the way I am able to share that is I've done my research, the deep analysis previously. And so I've got that. So you gave me, hey, the one thing. I know you care about the one thing. Could you give us some other key sentences that you've seen make a world of good impact when shared early? You could say, hey, this was the audience. This is what someone said and they loved it.
Yeah, I think the best way to start early is with a question. So if you have an audience, especially one that you can interact with, the best way to start is by asking them a kind of question that makes them reflect on their own lives where they tell you. So for instance, when I start the Go Big or Go Home keynote, I'll say, what does it feel like when somebody's pitching you? Like you go to your door and there's somebody standing there with a clipboard and they're like, you've been pre-approved. And so they talk about like, ugh, it feels icky. And then I say, well, what is the sound? Can we make a sound out of that feeling? And so then we as a room together make this sound and it sounds like, whoa, whoa. You know, it's a terrible sound. Now, all of us, we are pitching on a daily basis. And what we want to be is like a magician. So what is the sound that you would make when a magician like performs their trick and does so flawlessly? Pete?
Oh.
Yes. That is how we want people to feel about us. We want them to feel that sound. And so now we as a group have done something together. We've made that gross sound. We've made that ah sound. We are on the same page. And now we can move on to something interesting or maybe even more surprising. But now we're doing something together as opposed to me coming in and being like, let me tell you about my sales experience and how this is a method that could really help your company. You're like, okay, I've heard this.
Yeah. And it's so funny that the sound about an emotion is really resonating, because I'm thinking about David Allen getting things done. We've had him on the show a couple of times. He's great. And he talks about when you have a list of stuff, to-do list or whatever, and you look at it, you just go, ugh. And like, that's one of the things I remember most of all the things he said in the hours of David I've listened to and read, is the ugh, because I feel it and I think it later. And then he brings me home. It's like, well, part of the problem is you haven't clearly identified the next action or started your to-do list with clear verbs associated with, well, what does mom mean on your to-do list? It's going to leave you with an because it's unclear, and it's one of a dozen things. And here now I feel connected to David and what he has to say. So I'm with you on the sound emotion.
Well, that's surprising. You know, most people communicate their ideas with words, not sounds. And so that's another way for us to combine some of these elements together.
Okay. And the eye?
The eye. Include 3D objects. So there's some crazy research, Pete, about how our brains memorize. So we're not talking about understanding what your learning method is, but I'm talking about remembering. And we all remember visually. And so you're going to remember something that's a picture much more than you will just text alone, but you're going to remember 3D objects even more than the picture. And so I have this example during the keynote where I talk about a product, which is, it's called the Poo Trap. And it is this harness that you put on your dog that captures the poop at the moment it comes out of your dog. Hmm. So just imagine that. But so I'm describing, I read the description, but then I show you the photo, which I wish I had to put up on the screen now, but it's like this S&M looking contraption for your dog with a bag at the end, you know? And then everyone laughs. And I'm like, look, this photo is so much more memorable than the description. And I go to my bag on stage. And I'm like, I'm going to pass around this 3D version of the Poo Trap. Let's see which one you remember the most. And they're like, oh my God. So how do you bring your ideas into the physical world? I'll give you another example. My friend Abe is a cancer researcher, and he goes to these conferences of cancer researchers. And he has this incredible work about how to get your T cells to fight cancers themselves, like how to arm your T cells so that you don't need chemotherapy and you don't need radiation when you have cancer. But when he goes to these conferences, like, everybody's working on something miraculous. So it's hard for him to get people's attention. So what he did was had another friend of ours, his kids go to my kid's school, and we had another mom from our kid's school, make a 3D model of a T cell fighting a cancer cell. It's just like a big blob with like plastic icicles coming out of it and some lights. Like, it's a 3D rendering of science. But he puts it on a table when he goes to a cancer conference and just flips it on, and everyone flocks to him because they want to know what the thing is.
What is this thing? Yeah.
It's different. This is about standing out. It's about being memorable. It's about piquing somebody's interest. And it is sparked so many conversations that are so valuable for his research, all because he brought this intangible idea into the 3D world.
Well, that's juicy. And so now I'm thinking, I have almost signed up and gone to ATD, the Association for Talent Development conference, a few times. And so as I'm thinking, if I were to have a table as an exhibitor, and so, hey, I've got a podcast about being awesome at your job, I might just have a big old microphone at the exhibition booth table. And that's kind of weird and different. And it's just like, so what's up with a microphone? Like, that's all there is, huh? That'll do it?
Or some kind of, it just depends on how creative you want to be. But anything that is a representation of what you can create. I spoke to this group of insurance sales folks, and one of them talked about bringing a jar full of pennies with him to appointments. And it's not a big jar of pennies, but it's this much a month that protects your family in case this horrible thing happens. And you look at it and you're like, I could part with a jar of pennies like that. And so it's just about taking any part of your presentation and making a physical element of it, just something to bring people to you.
Lay it on some examples of if things feel abstract, like happiness, joy, a fulfilled employee who wants to stick around longer because they're engaged and motivated. What are some of those things?
So like when you're pitching, Pete, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just thinking to make a 3D object out of the intangible. What are some cool ideas or examples of how that's done?
Sure. So one way is to make 3D objects about them. So like has nothing to do with your product offering, just your enthusiasm for what they do. So the mug, the plaque, these are all examples of my enthusiasm to be here with you today. Second, you can show a 3D, something physical that is an example of what you're talking about. So people that I've helped get jobs before, they have printed out their like number one reference referral on a thick piece of paper and left it. And it's different than emailing it to somebody. Like one really thick piece of cardboard with this like valuable testimonial. They'll be like, do I throw this away? I don't know what to do with this, but they'll handle it. And so it'll go into a different part of their brain. Somebody else that I worked with, she went to a presentation and she brought a bunch of tacos with her. And she said, you know, our city has the best tacos, and taco stands for, and then she had something for each of the letters, like tenacious, audacious, I don't know. Each one of the taco letters stood for something, but they were representative of what she would bring to the job. And it was a very competitive gig, and she got it.
That is cool. And I've got a buddy, Kevin, who was presenting like, hey, this is what could be possible if you sort of let our organization just take care of this whole event. Because there was a coalition, it was complicated, a lot of infighting, whatever. It's like, and so he had some large card, like you might find in a preschool, large cardboard, like bricks. So they looked like red, like bricks. It's like, so, hey, this is how many people we have right now. But our projections are with this estimate and this, the funds and the initiatives, as we'll be able to have this many, you know, people, like we're going to build it up so it's six times bigger. And so you could put that on a stacked bar chart on a slide. Sure. But sure enough, just be, it's like, ooh, that's a lot of bricks. It just hits people, even though it's the same thing, but it's in 3D.
Pete, yes, and what I would do in that case is I would bring something that is elaborate that they would not have money to spend on their event, but would be cool. So like as an example, one of those cameras that spins around you and produces really fun social media footage. Anyway, you would bring something that's like, we would never be able to afford that, and be like, yeah, you can. Let me show you how to afford this thing that would be really cool for your event, because we're going to run it a little bit different. So like something that is aspirational, you know?
And Diana, I am curious if folks are, since you are an innovation and creativity expert, if folks are thinking that's a really cool concept, and I've only got two ideas, they feel pretty lame. How would you recommend they creatively generate some better ones? Should we hire you for consulting, Diana? Is that what
I think it's about trying to work with people and brainstorm like what would work best in the situation, and just volume of ideas. I really believe in creating top 10 lists. I think we may have talked about this last time, but we often stop at the first or second idea for something. But if you can push your brain through creating 10 different ideas, the best, like some of them will be terrible, you know, but the best one will probably be in the middle, and we would have prevented yourself from getting there by stopping at the first or second.
That's cool. All right. So now what's the C?
The C is co-create together. And we have this really interesting piece of research that was done. This woman followed Hollywood executives around and CEOs as they were getting pitched. So these are people that are getting pitched a lot of times. And her quote is that people think that just having a good idea will sell itself, and they are wrong. Because these people who are getting pitched a lot, they kind of try to put you in a box as soon as you come into the room and stereotype you in some way. And the only way for you to get out of that box and to close the deal is to ask them to co-create a piece of that presentation with you. So what that means is we can't have a fully baked idea that we go in with. We can have like kind of parameters of what we think the idea is. But if we can get them to co-create with us, like suggest their ideas, kind of like you've been doing today, Pete, you're sharing your experiences, making it a richer experience for everybody else, then that is a true art of seduction. So this woman who followed all these executives around, the people who had the best chance of winning the pitch are the ones that had an element of co-creation in it, not ones that just like razzle dazzled them.
Okay. Can you give us some examples of how that might be articulated?
Yeah. We have examples in the book of how people come with an idea up to 50%. And then they say, what do you think? How do we solve this problem? Hey, let me articulate the problem. How do we solve it together? If you're doing a presentation, it's about having chunks of the presentation where people get to interact. They are voting. They are responding. They are doing something to be a part of the experience in a way that if I were to do this again, it would never be the same exact experience.
Okay. So is it sort of like, hey, and we see there's four options, vote here, or how's that sound?
So one of the things that I do at the end of my presentations is I will create a top 10 list with the audience. So I say, I know how this stuff is important in your work, but I don't do what you do every day. So can we come up with a list of 10 things that are like ahas or takeaways or things that you would want to share with the rest of the audience? And now they are co-creating the presentation with me. It's my framework, but then they give examples from their own lives and they enrich the content even better and give everybody else ideas in the specific industry that I'm talking to.
And ideally, those will be all the more precise and specific to their experiences, whether they are in the food and beverage industry or industrial mining or whatever.
That's right. And for the people, you know, listening to your podcast, they have a job, they're pitching to their boss. You know, if you come in and you feel like you have to have all the answers, they're not going to be as bought in as if you say, let's solve this problem together. I've done this much legwork. I've got this much figured out. I'd love your feedback on what you think about this part or help me brainstorm here. And if you genuinely care about their opinion, they're going to be a lot more invested in the overall outcome.
All right. Well, Diana, tell me any final do's or don'ts you want to put out there in terms of being memorable and persuasive.
I think that thinking about how to create more magic in your life is the key to building better relationships. It helps you get gifts for your spouse and your kids. It helps you improve existing relationships and build new ones.
That's good. All right, Diana, now let's hear about some of your favorite things. Could you start with a favorite quote?
I'm going to give one from the book, which is the only way to connect with people in a way that no one else can is to do research that no one else will.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. And a favorite study or experiment or bit of research?
We talk about this study in the book about how they put people into an fMRI machine and they can actually predict your decisions 11 seconds before you can rationally understand them, which means that we're making decisions in our gut. And then it goes up to our brain where we rationalize why we're so smart and we made that decision. But our body is a much older system than the rational brain alone. Like almost all of our decisions are made on an emotional level in our gut. And so if you know that about a person, then you want to be able to speak to their gut and connect with them on that emotional level. Because if you just try to stick with logic and reason, you'll never break through to that very important level.
You know, Diana, I've heard that many times before, that we make decisions emotionally and then rationalize them later. This fMRI 11 seconds is new to me, so thank you. Can you expand on the protocol for the study? They say, hey, do you want to do this or that? And they can see like, ooh, the brain is lighting up on excitement here and dread there. Therefore, they're going to pick A. Is that how it goes down?
That's right. That's exactly it.
Okay.
And there's a additional study where they asked people, you know, that study Coke or Pepsi, which do you prefer? And when the cans were blind, you couldn't tell which one was which. People overwhelmingly preferred Pepsi. But when you can see the brand logo, people overwhelmingly prefer Coke. And in the fMRI machine, they can see that when they get excited about Coke, it is their emotional, like, memory chunks that are lining up. And Pepsi does nothing for those. I don't know how they got in there, but it is the emotional connection.
Oh, you mean the actual can inside of an fMRI machine? Maybe it's a picture.
No, their brains, the brains. Oh. But it is our emotional connection to certain things that gets us excited and drives us to action. And if you want to get a yes in the room, you want somebody to pick you, you want them to do what you're recommending, then you have to talk to them on, you have to spike those emotions in some way.
All right. And a favorite book?
So related to the topic that we're talking about in doing research, there's a book by John Rulin called Giftology that I really got a lot of. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, it's on how to give really meaningful gifts. And we ended up interviewing John for our book, but it is the gospel on how to give professional gifts in a way to create connection with people.
Okay. And a favorite tool?
I have to talk about Notion, which is my new second brain. I used to write down everything everywhere. And now I have literally all my thoughts and ideas in one place. And I'm so grateful for it.
And I might just follow up here a little bit. I've used Notion just a smidge, but can you tell me, why is Notion superior to like an Evernote or a Bear or the Notes memo app that's native to phones?
Because you can create, like, let's say you have an idea, you can create pages within that idea. So you, it's not everything just one straight line. So for instance, I have, let's say, marketing for my company, and then I have a newsletter hub, webinar hub. So like each one of those is a hyperlink to another page. And in that other page, you can create tables and you can create that do math for you. And you can create content ideas and you can add documents and links to, it's all saved in one place. I don't know what to tell you, but I do know that now I have three tabs open on my Chrome. And before Notion, it was 1,000.
Okay. And a favorite habit?
It is drinking 100 ounces of water every single day, Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll give you a rule that helps me do that. I think you have to have rules to help you do the things that you want. And I promised myself that I would drink 2 glasses of water before having a cup of coffee in the morning. So that helps me in the morning. And then every time I go to the bathroom, I drink a glass of water. It's, I don't know if you've heard the Tiny Habits book.
Oh, BJ Fogg. He's great.
And now it's like a cycle that doesn't end.
So what is the impact you have observed of drinking 100 ounces of water per day versus just whenever you're thirsty?
Yeah. You know, we don't fully understand how much impact just having enough water in your system does for your nutrition, like just washing toxins out of your body, staying healthy, having the ability to have more energy throughout the day, being able to go to sleep on time. Like, it's an unbelievable amount of benefits that you can get.
And speaking of hydration and sleep, do you have a hydration cutoff time?
Oh, definitely. Like 7 o'clock. I stop the cycle.
And is there a key nugget you share that really seems to connect and resonate with folks? They quote it back to you often?
You know, I think a way to sum up this conversation is, if it's not memorable, then it's mediocre. And I think we overestimate how much of an impact we make on others. And our goal shouldn't just be to do our best job, but it is to be memorable. And when we make that the focus, we'll bring a totally different game to the challenge.
All right. And if folks want to learn more or get in touch, where would you point them?
I am very prevalent on LinkedIn. I would love to connect there. And you can go to my website, dianacander.com. And oh, Pete, I brought a gift for all your listeners, not just for you.
Oh, boy.
I care about them. I want to connect with them.
I'm listening.
And it's a pretty good gift, actually. If you want a copy of the book, but you don't want to buy one, just email me, diana@dianacander.com, and I'll send you a digital copy of Go Big or Go Home so that you can benefit from the lessons. You just got to tell me why you want it, and it's yours.
All right. And do you have a final challenge or call to action for folks looking to be awesome at their jobs?
As I think about your audience, Pete, I think the number one thing I would say is dig your well before you need it. Make sure that you have the relation, like things are happening at a very fast pace. Things are changing. You're going to need relationships in your life for whatever the next thing is. So make sure that you're investing in all of those individuals so that you can help them or they can help you later.
All right. Diana, this has been a treat. I wish you much bigness and fun.
Thank you so much, Pete.
I love what Diana had to say, that if you're not memorable, you're mediocre. And the key to being memorable is to have those emotional experiences. And it's funny, you couldn't see the video. Maybe someday we'll integrate that. If there's interest, let me know. Email pete@awesomeatyourjob.com. But she was, she picked up a How to Be Awesome at Your Job mug and sipped from it, just all cool during our chat. And I will remember that probably forever. That's a little thing you can do. And doing that research, boy, really goes a long way. So I recommend, figure out when does it really, really count to be memorable, and go ahead and do that research over the top so that you get the points of connection and you're memorable and not have a 90% of your stuff forgotten super quick. Great stuff from Diana. Again, the show notes, the transcript, and the links to items that we've mentioned is at awesomeatyourjob.com/EP870. Hope to catch you next time, and peace.
Thanks for listening. To get the most out of the show, we recommend two key things. First, check out the extra resources at awesomeatyourjob.com. You can find this episode's transcript and links, as well as the perfect episode for your situation. You can search the full text transcripts of hundreds of episodes or explore episodes tagged by topic and competency covered. Second, subscribe to the podcast and get future episodes automatically. You can subscribe by telling Siri and several other smartphones and speakers, subscribe to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, or by tapping subscribe in your podcast player of choice. If you'd like some extra help figuring out podcasts and how subscriptions work, visit awesomeatyourjob.com/subscribe for guidance. Hope to catch you on the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.